It's me, Mario!
What's up and welcome to NXpress, SoundOnSite.org's Nintendo podcast. With me is Aaron Santos.
Hello.
And Ricky D.
Hello, everybody.
And since we have no special guest this week, we are going to play five questions with me.
That's right.
Of all people.
Yeah. Just to let our listeners know, we're actually starting a little bit later than normal. And so this is going to be a shorter show. But so we just thought we would, you know, ask Tim five questions, because usually we ask the guest five questions, but we don't have a guest this week, so why not? Mm-hmm. All right. So, Tim, question number one. What is your favorite Super Mario game of all time?
I am going to go ahead and say Super Mario 3.
Okay. And what would you say is your fondest childhood memory when it comes to playing video games?
I remember the day my brother got Link's Awakening for Game Boy, and that was like the first game I remember playing, and just venturing into that world and experiencing what Link experienced just changed me, and I've been a gamer ever since.
If you had to become one character in the Nintendo universe, which character would you choose to be?
Red from Pokemon.
All right. What would you say would be the best decision Nintendo can do in regards to the next console, the NX?
Get Half-Life 3 as an exclusive.
Okay.
Half-Life.
It would sell consoles.
Exclusive?
Can you deny me that?
Half-Life.
Yeah, exclusive.
Oh, you're going to piss off a lot of PC gamers.
Hey, no, I'm not saying it like it'll ever happen, but if they want to ensure sales, that's how you do it, right there.
Which leads me to my fifth question, which we were going to talk about last week, and I figure this is a good point to ask you. Why don't you like PC gaming?
Yeah, I do not like PC gaming because I need a controller. I think it's a really, really cheap option, which works for a lot of people.
Cheap?
But you have to have the games are a lot cheaper, but it's not cheap in and of itself because you need a gaming console, and those get really, really pricey. And so in the end, I feel like it's cheaper just to keep buying consoles mm-hmm. over and over again. And outside of that, you know, I just never got as into it. Yeah, like, I'm not a keyboard gamer at all. I cannot play with a keyboard to save my life. I like consoles, and I like having hard copies of all my discs, so having them in a digital format is just not as thrilling to me.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny, we talked about this last week, and like you, I need a controller.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest issue, too, is that I like to play video games in the living room with my friends and family, and not necessarily in my bedroom in front of a desktop. But in terms of the controller, like I talked about this last week, I don't know if you listened to the podcast, is I played Badass Elephant on my nephew's laptop. So I purchased the game on Steam, downloaded it onto his laptop, and then hooked his laptop into my big screen TV in the living room. And we also have a controller. So it kind of felt like we were playing on a home console. Mm-hmm. But you are right, because technically you need a really good computer, which can be quite expensive if you want to play really good games on Steam.
More or less. It depends. You see, now, you could build... Okay, to build a machine just like, let's say, a PS4 and Xbox One nowadays, it's really coming the same price. I think the stigma really is that people assume that you need the highest level of, like, let's say, like, GPUs and CPUs and all that. But really, like, if you just stick to the basics, I mean, like, the power that goes into console gaming, it's like, I'm not necessarily bashing console gaming, but it's like you're using the basic parts of what's needed to play nowadays, and which could run you easily just $500, and especially that the prices of GPUs have dramatically gone down. So
Yeah, no, I think in the long run, you will save money with PC gaming. You buy yourself an expensive computer, like Aaron said, you build a computer. Aaron actually built his computer, and his computer is amazing. This thing looks like it came out of like an alien ship from the movie Prometheus or something. It's like mind-blowing. Such an amazing piece of hardware. Hey,
I should post pictures somewhere.
you should actually send me a picture, and I'll include it in our post.
No problem.
Also, with console gaming, is the actual games themselves are pretty expensive, especially for Nintendo. Like, for example, I wanted to buy the Kirby game that was released on the Wii, because of course, you can play it on the Wii U, and they released it on the Wii U on the virtual game store, right? But I was like, no, I want the physical copy because, like Tim, I like to own the physical copies. They haven't dropped the price of that game yet. It's been years since it's been released. So that's like the biggest problem with Nintendo games. It's like their value doesn't go down. And so the disc price never goes down. Because I honestly, I've been trying to purchase a lot of Wii games because I don't have my Wii anymore. It's a long story, but I can still play, like I said, the Wii games on the Wii U. So I'm like, oh, I could still purchase these games and play it on the Wii U, and they are so bloody expensive. So.
Now, which is like the turn off to me in Nintendo sometimes. Like the prices just never go down, and the sale, even when they say like there's a sale, you're only saving like what, 20% at best.
But those games are all so replayable, and the quality of the games is phenomenal compared to the rest of the industry. I feel like so many games, even like some of the best, going back and trying to replay them is really, really hard because they were industry standard at a time, and now they're just not. Whereas Nintendo just has such a timeless quality that I honestly think that they price almost everything where it should be. Whether I want to pay that or not is a totally different story, but I see that as a pretty reasonable value.
That's true though. You have a point. I mean, like I went back to play like Kirby's Return to Dreamland, and it still looks good until today.
Their sprites are always amazing, and even like we're going to talk about Super Mario 64 finally later, and that looks a little harsh on the eyes, but it still is phenomenal. So there wasn't a ton of news this week, so our Nintendo is going to be really, really short, honestly. The only news that came out is there is news about Super Mario Maker that it'll take a minimum of 9 days to unlock all the content.
Which a lot of people are complaining about. I'm so sick and tired of gamers complaining about like the stupidest, smallest things. Okay, first of all, you should be glad that you can actually play a game like Super Mario Maker if you can, because some kids around the world can't because they're too poor to play it. And they're living countries where they don't even have electricity. Secondly, you get the game on day one, and it's going to be somewhat overwhelming for most people. So they want you to learn how to use the basic tools. And then each and every single day for 9 days, it will release additional bonus features. It's not even additional bonus features, it's features. But they're slowly going to release it over 9 days so you can slowly become accustomed to each and every single tool. I think that's actually wise and smart. And you know what? Like, waiting 9 days isn't so bad because it might actually take you longer to learn how to use each and every single tool anyways. I can't imagine someone using every single tool on day one.
No. I definitely agree.
Especially when you want to get in there and play some of these levels. You don't just want to build stages. So I can totally imagine just kicking back, playing some levels for a while, building a stage or two, but most of
Dude,
the time it's going to be trying to beat the hardest stages out there.
you know why I think this game's going to be huge? Not just because it's a game in which you can create your own Super Mario levels, but because of how it's going to tie into YouTube. Because as we all know, YouTube is huge for video games. Just look at Let's Plays, which we've discussed a while back on our podcast. I was watching the IGN Super Mario Maker Challenge. I don't know if you guys watched it.
Yeah, these are funny.
Holy cow, it's amazing. I can't believe how much suspense someone can create from making one of these levels and put it on YouTube. Like when I was watching these videos, it was like I was watching a horror film. Like honestly, I was like, oh my god, no! And every time someone died, I would like holler. And that's the thing about Super Mario Maker. I think because it can connect to YouTube and because you will be able to upload these, I think that's just going to add to the popularity of the game because, I mean, if anything goes viral on YouTube, then it's like a sure hit, right? So, once again, if Splatoon can sell easily 1 million copies in a short period of time, imagine how many copies Super Mario Maker can sell. And because there's not a lot of games released for the Wii U to begin with, I'm talking about actual physical copies, the game's going to sell, because what else are you going to buy? Mm-hmm. So if there's 10 million people that own a Wii U, I guarantee you 10 million people are going to buy Super Mario Maker.
Do you think it's at all possible that Nintendo is intentionally holding back some of its bigger exclusive titles so that a game like this that's very experimental, very unique, and very unseen before can succeed?
Yes.
Now that I think about it, maybe Zelda's not showing up this year so that Super Mario Maker can actually shine. Because if I had the opportunity to buy Zelda or this game, I would definitely take Zelda. But because there's nothing else in the market at, what is it, September 18th or something random like that, then I'm definitely going to get this game and play the hell out of it.
True. I think it also has to do with the fact that Nintendo wants to remain in the spotlight, right? You can't just release all your best games in the first 2 years and then disappear for 4 years and all of a sudden release the NX and hope that people still remember who you are. I mean, I know it's Nintendo and all, but, you know, you still have to remain in the spotlight. It's no different than some musical artist who, I don't know, does some sort of like publicity stunt to get back in the spotlight while he or she is waiting to release their next album. I don't think they necessarily delayed Zelda because of Super Mario Maker. We've talked about this before in the past. I think it has a lot to do with the anniversary of Zelda next year. It's 30 years. It's Zelda's 30-year anniversary, at least in Japan. But I think they want to spread out their games because they don't have the third-party support. Mm-hmm. It's wise for Nintendo to spread out the games for the Wii U and not let the system completely die in the first 2 years until they release the NX. And I honestly still think that the NX is not going to replace the Wii U. I don't know what it's going to be, but they can't replace the Wii U. We talked about this in the last 2 weeks. How can you replace, for example, the gamepad? I mean, Nintendo's all about preserving their history and the amazing games that they've released over the years, and they are also always about backwards compatibility, right? Mm-hmm. So some of their biggest hits over the past 10 years, and I'm not just referring to the Wii U, I'm also talking about like the DS and the 3DS, it all revolves around touchscreen. So they still need some sort of touchscreen device for the NX. Otherwise, they're going to be turning their back on Super Mario Maker and Splatoon.
And hopefully we'll have connectivity that lets us use a Wii U controller and still connect with our 3DS so that we can always use a touchscreen. I'm really hoping that the NX allows us to use all of our previous controllers and all of our fun gadgets.
Yeah. The one thing I want to mention very quickly about Super Mario Maker before we move on is, did you hear about the Mystery Mushroom? The new details about the Mystery Mushroom? Okay, so...
Yeah. No.
I heard that the Mystery Mushroom unlocks 70 bonus characters.
70.
So, 70. So I'm doing my math here, and if I'm correct, there's 52 characters in Super Smash, which, of course, they've released Amiibo for, or at least are going to. There's a few characters still on the way. And then there's the Amiibo for, say, Mario Party, which is basically like the same, like, you know, as the Super Smash, except for maybe Toad. And then we have, like, the Animal Crossing Amiibo. So this means that they should have at least 70 Amiibo that you can unlock in Super Mario Maker by the end of the year.
That's awesome.
That's crazy.
More uses for Amiibos.
Unless it's some sort of, like, I don't know, bonus ability and or something.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. I'm like, is there really, like, an upside to using these characters? Like, let's say you use Link, right? Can you use the sword?
I don't know. See, we don't know. It could maybe be that maybe you can only unlock, say, 20 characters, but you also can get 20 extra abilities. I don't know. Mm. But just a number, 70, and that's just to begin with. Like, who knows if you can, like, download additional bonus material later on, right? Mm-hmm. That's amazing. So that has me excited.
Yeah, that's super exciting.
All right.
I think that'll do it for our Nintendosage. Not much else to discuss. Before we do go, I have to ask, Splatfest for Splatoon is going to be Autobots versus Decepticons, which is a really, really fun merging of two totally different franchises. Mm-hmm. You guys, Autobots or Decepticons? Go.
Decepticons.
Autobots. But the thing is, I still didn't get back my Splatoon game, guys. That's why I haven't played it. I'm so
sorry. Ricky.
I know.
Ricky, you got to get it back.
Never lending out a game ever again. I hate the people who do not return the things that you lend to them right away spoil it for everyone else. It's the rotten apple that spoils it for the whole entire population.
See, my father teaches me a valuable lesson when I was a kid. It's like, don't lend anything you're willing to lose.
Right.
So I'm very careful. So.
What about you, Autobot, Decepticon?
I think I'm gonna go Decepticon.
I thought you were gonna say Gobot.
Sweet. Gobot.
Yeah, definitely Gobot.
Gobot. All right.
Do people even know who Gobots are?
I know who Gobots are.
Yeah, I know who Gobots are.
Do people
are.
Even know who Autobots are?
I'm sure they do.
Michael Bay movie, but can anyone name any of the ones that aren't in the movies?
Sludge? The whole Dinobot crew? I don't know.
Yeah. Optimus Primal.
It's been a while since I watched a TV show. I used to
Optimus Primal? Wow, that's like Beast Wars.
Beast Wars is awesome.
Yeah, well, Beast Wars is awesome. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. That was one of my biggest pet peeves when reading reviews is when someone uses the word was, or they put their review in the past tense, like the cinematography of Raging Bull was amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, has it changed over the years? No, it's is. People, if you write reviews, stay in the present tense when referring to it's how you feel about the movie.
Totally relevant. Go check out my recent article about the two multiplayer 3DS games coming out, Triforce Heroes and Metroid Prime, whatever it's called. Because I totally call out the person that wrote the petition to get the Metroid game removed. And I made that exact same argument that when talking about material, you use it in the present tense. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. It drives me nuts. You know how many times I have to edit articles and change the past tense, present tense? Anyhow, a little bit of inside baseball for our listeners. If you want to know what it's like to run a website, it's a pain in the ass.
So there you go. Ricky with a grammar lesson, Aaron with a life lesson, mm-hmm. and Tim with nothing valuable. We're going to take a brief little break and be back for our main event.
Or zig when we can zag.
We will walk through walls.
We will take a look around us.
We will not be confined.
We believe in the path of least limits.
We won't be told how to view the world.
We will experience true freedom.
We will not compromise.
We will live the game through our hands.
We will be in control of something.
We will change the system.
Welcome back to N-Express, where we are at our main event, a huge main event, a discussion of the Super Mario 64.
A few weeks ago, I think it was actually way back in like episode 5 or something, had games editor Mike Werby on the show as a guest, and we were talking about Super Mario 64, and I think he and I both said that the game doesn't really stand a test of time, specifically we're referring to the visuals, because it looks ugly. So then I followed up on this claim a few weeks later, when I admitted that there was something actually wrong with the connection from my Wii U to my TV, and that's why the graphics looked all terrible. So then I went back, and all week long, I've been playing Super Mario 64 to the point where I wanted to finish the game. I did not 100% complete it because I just didn't have the time, but I did finish the game. And now I am ready to actually review this game and to let you know if it stands the test of time and follow up on my claim about how ugly the graphics and the game are to this day in 2015.
So go.
Here's the thing. It looks beautiful.
Yeah. So this game, for our listeners, came out in 1996 during a huge transition from 2D to 3D graphics. So the big question was, how do we handle that, right? Mm-hmm. Nintendo chose very geometric looking shapes. So we have a lot of hexagons, rounded images that are still very, very boxy, but that's how they made the transition. So you have a game like this where Mario is clearly very, very dimensional and not very rounded. So lots of people say that this was ultimately what set the N64 apart from the PlayStation, which got better images as it progressed. But this was an awesome solution for the time, and honestly, I think it represents the era better than any PlayStation game.
Oh, I totally agree. Now, the thing about this game is it was released at launch with the Nintendo 64. So Nintendo's third home console, released 1996. You know, got we have to put this in perspective because this is not 2015. This is like decades ago, right? Mm-hmm. So they didn't have the technology back then. And people went crazy for Nintendo 64. When it came out, it was almost impossible to get a system on the first day. Like, I mean, like there was lineups, I remember. Like, it was sold out within a day. And it was also released alongside Pilot Wings 64. So there was two games released at launch, Super Mario 64 and Pilot Wings. And so Super Mario Brothers, as we've talked about in the past, invented and defined the standards for side-scrolling platform games way back in 1985, like more than a decade before Super Mario 64 came out. But like Tim said, they wanted to move into 3D. And Mario really led the charge into the 3D world for platformers.
Mm-hmm.
So as we look back on this game, it was a game changer. It was revolutionary. You know, we cannot deny the impact this game has had on the entire industry.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the earlier three-dimensional platform games with degrees of freedom through all three axes in space. And it features like these large open worlds, like these maps. And like Tim said, it had these true 3D polygons as opposed to two-dimensional sprites.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a very ballsy move on the part of Miyamoto and Nintendo, for that matter, because they're basically taking their number one franchise and they're playing around with it with a formula that they don't even know if it's going to work or not. But the game was released with the system. Can you imagine if the game wasn't good and it's the first game released for the N64?
I think Nintendo would have been in a lot of trouble.
That just shows confidence in their product, though, that they just put it out there right away.
Mm-hmm. Especially that was like untested waters. Like no one's ever really seen. No one's ever really seen like a 3D platformer before.
People often say that we will never see a jump quite like the one that we got from the SNES to the 64, and so this was huge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So on our website, soundinsight.org, I'm basically writing up a series called Brick by Brick, The House That Mario Built, and I've already released my first article in the series about the NES days, and I'm going to be releasing a Super NES article this week and my 64 article to follow. I've already written it, and one thing I wrote in my article, and I'm not sure if you guys know this, is as opposed to jumping in right away and designing, say, the levels for the game and or the game itself, Miyamoto actually focused on Mario himself. And what I mean by that is, so he designed the character and he designed every single one of his moves, because as you well know, and we'll talk about this later, there's tons of moves that Mario can perform in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did was he created that rabbit, that annoying rabbit that you have to chase after
at one point
of the game.
Yeah.
It just drives you insane. So he created the rabbit. And so in the game, Mario needs to chase after the rabbit, and if you get the rabbit, you get a power star, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the idea was that he wanted to make sure that he can make Mario's moveset flawless first before going ahead and producing the rest of the game. Because making the transition to 3D, of course, was no easy feat, and so he wanted to really make sure he got the controls right. Because at the end of the day, if the game isn't fun, it doesn't matter how pretty the game looks. If it's not fun, it's not fun, right? Mm-hmm. This is a game. And so if you can make this fun and or at least easy to control, if he can do that, then he can go ahead and make the rest of the game. So he actually started with the rabbit and Mario's moveset before he even decided to design the game. And he started designing that 5 years prior. And they actually developed and produced and created the game, the actual game, in less than 2 years. Which is not a lot of time, because sometimes it takes like half a decade to create this kind of game.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have played it recently, you know the scope and scale of the game is massive in and of itself. So the fact that they did it that fast is pretty remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's just talk about the level design, I guess. So, you know, you get the standard video game environments, like there's the water world, there's the ice world, there's the lava world, et cetera, et cetera. But the variety of these levels and the scale of each course, I think, is incredible. Like, there is just so much to explore. There's never, ever a dull moment in the game. And like previous Mario titles, secrets play a huge part of the experience. So there's all these like hidden rooms and hidden items that you have to find. And the thing about Super Mario 64 is you can replay this game again and again in a different order. So you can go and do this task number first and then do this later, and or get this star first and get this star later. Mm-hmm. So there's an infinite number of ways in which you can do the actual order. And I don't know if you guys know this, but they were developing Super Mario 64, of course, at the very same time they were making The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, right? Mm-hmm. But because Super Mario 64 was the launch title, they needed to hurry up and finish the game. So they actually took a bunch of puzzles that were supposed to be in The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time game, and they moved it over to Super Mario 64, which is why this game is crammed with so many hidden secrets and puzzles.
But that's what's so fun about the game. I mean, not only do you have these big worlds to explore, but you, like have you mentioned, you have so many different stars that has you approach the level a totally different way, and you do something different within that same level, which is great. But then everything that's hidden in each particular map and out of the maps, just in the castle, it's remarkable.
Yeah, it was really a game that opened the world to like level exploration, you know? You really get that sense in this game where it's like you can just explore whatever you wanted in the level at your own pace.
You kind of have to.
You have to. I mean, especially like we mentioned, like it's one of the first games to do it, and who knew like this was the concept they were going for. I mean, the beginning of the Mario games was so linear, and then you move into this world where it's like massive and huge and I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's because if you haven't played the game for whatever reason, which is possible, you know, there's some people that haven't played it. So the game consists of 15 massive courses. Mm-hmm. And in each course, Mario can collect up to 7 stars.
There are some courses where I got lost.
Yeah. Okay, well, anyways, up to 7 stars maximum. But if you want to 100% complete the game, you have to get 120 stars. And if mm-hmm. you get the 120 stars and complete the game, you get to meet Yoshi at the end of the game. So depending on your skill set, you can finish the game in like a day or two if you really like, you know, sit on the couch for a whole entire day and play the game. But I'm talking about finishing the game. I'm not talking about completing it, because you only need 50 stars to get to the last Bowser. Mm-hmm. But if you want to 100% complete the game, you need to get 120 stars. And the thing about this is there's a lot of games where I just have no interest in being a completist, like because I just don't find it fun. Mm-hmm. But in this game, I think it's actually fun. Like, part of the fun and challenge is to actually get the 120 stars. And that is not something I can say for most games, because sometimes that really annoys the shit out of me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So yeah. Any casual gamer can finish Super Mario 64. Like, it's not as difficult as it will first appear to be. But in order to complete it 100%, you got to have skills, man, because it is hard, like bloody hard.
Yeah.
And a guide, because there's like one or two things where I could not figure it out without like resorting to like the internet and or something. In my case, I asked my nephew.
So taking this huge transition and this huge massive game, a total of 120 stars, the things that really stand out to me is just how different it is from its predecessor. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have this big gap, and a lot of the mechanics are very, very similar. You're still Mario, and you're still running around in a world, hopping and jumping on things. Mm-hmm. Granted, the platforming's very different because it's in a third dimension. Mm-hmm. But if you jump on a Koopa, he gets knocked out of a shell, and then you can kick his shell and kill some stuff with the shell. But then there are so many new mechanics where, for example, if you jump on that Koopa shell now in Super Mario 64, you can surf on it. Mm-hmm. And it's those kinds of unexpected treats that you just do not see coming, having never played a game like this, that just made this game remarkable to me. Like, I don't know how long I spent just sitting on a Koopa shell surfing around in the first level. Like, that was the best thing ever.
Well, for me,
how about when you fight Bowser? Like, at first, I had no idea how to handle Bowser. Now it seems very standard to us because we've seen so many bosses like this. Mm-hmm. Whether it be from Mario or other 3D platformers. But at the time, I don't remember anything quite like this, where Mario has to grab Bowser and end up swinging him and throwing him off the map.
Mm-hmm. True.
And it was just such a crazy change of pace that not only was it a new like puzzle to solve, but it took Mario and brought him to a totally new place.
No, I was gonna say, like, one of my favorite parts, especially playing this growing up as a kid, was like the first time I saw like Mario sliding down those icy slopes there, where you have to like knock down the penguins
with the penguins.
I mean, like that sort of like little introduction to new ways to play Mario, I thought that was really neat.
Oh, do you mean like sort of like the bobsledding competition?
Yeah, the bobsledding thing.
Oh yeah, when because
he sits down and scoots.
Man, mm-hmm. What I love about that level is the penguins. Not just that penguin, but also when you have to go look for the baby penguin who's lost. And mm-hmm. I don't know if this happened to you, but there's two baby penguins. And so if you pick up the wrong baby penguin and you bring it to the mom, she's like, "That's not my baby. He looks nothing like me, but it looks exactly like her." The penguins look the same. Yeah, totally. But the thing about the moveset is, you're right, like, he looks differently, clearly, because he's in, like, 3D graphics. But, I mean, aside from, like, the usual normal punch, kick, jump, and maybe butt stomp, mm-hmm. We also get the triple jump, the long jump, yeah. Which is my favorite, and the backflip and somersault. Like, mm-hmm. I love the backflip and somersault.
So fun.
But the craziest thing is they added a wall kick. So you can actually perform like these wall kicks like Ryu from Ninja Gaiden mm-hmm. to like climb up these like mountains and whatnot. Like, it's just amazing. And so the other weird thing about this game, which I completely forgot about, is the Super Mushroom and Fire Flower are nowhere to be found in this game, from my knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the... I think if there was like a couple of criticisms I had, it was like this, it was very basic in powers. There wasn't as much as like opposed to like the other Super Mario games before it.
No, well, here we get the color caps.
Yeah, you get the flying cap.
Well, yeah, there's the wing cap, which is the red, mm-hmm. and there's the blue is the vanish cap. Mm-hmm. So the wing cap basically allows Mario to fly,
which is the best thing.
Oh my god, because yeah, we talked about how cool it was for Mario to fly in like Super Mario World, for example, mm-hmm. but man, flying him in this game is so much cooler.
Like, yeah, it's incredible.
And it shows the scope of the game too when you start flying in the air. So imagine, go ahead.
Yeah, there's specific stars that you cannot get unless you get the cap and the wing cap, and you have to fly, say, over the rainbow, for example. Mm-hmm. There's the vanish cap, which basically makes him sort of like invisible and invulnerable to attacks. And the metal cap. I never really liked the metal cap. So essentially he transforms into like Metal Mario, and it's good for going underwater because you would just like sink down to the bottom, and so you can easily walk underwater and, like, I don't know, get some coins and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I never really liked Metal Mario because you couldn't, like, even jump because he's so heavy.
Yeah.
I was just like, this is the worst ability ever. Yeah, so that's one flaw to the game. I wasn't a huge fan of Metal Mario. Flaw number two I want to talk about, because I don't think this is a perfect game. You mentioned Bowser, Tim. Man,
yeah.
Not a fan of boss battles in this game. I know Super Mario, the series, is never really about the boss battles, mm-hmm. but come on. All three boss battles are exactly alike.
Throw them off.
Yeah, you run into Bowser three times, you grab him by the tail, and then you throw him off to the side and hope he hits a bomb. Mm-hmm. And you only have to hit the bomb once. That's it. It's not like the typical Super Mario game where it's always like you have to stomp on him like three times and or whatnot, mm-hmm. Or throw a bomb at him three times. In this case, it's like one time only. So that's the second flaw for the game. I just don't think it has a very interesting boss battle at all. I think it's like the least interesting boss battle of any Mario game, actually.
And sure. I think that going forward, you can see how the boss battles get a lot more dynamic, especially if you look at something like Super Mario 3D World when you fight Bowser in, spoilers, his cat form. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a totally different game at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that without them taking these sort of treacherous steps into new terrain where you fight Bowser in a totally new way, that I don't think we would have some of these really, really fun boss battles that you get in stuff like Mario Galaxy or Mario 3D World.
I don't know. For me, like, my main issue, even going back to it, well, actually going back to it now, is just the I don't know if you guys could agree with me, but like the camera control in this game is kind of... I don't know.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, for me, like, just controlling the camera, and especially, like, it's like, I don't want to criticize too heavily on that fact, especially that this came out,
oh,
like...
Oh, no, criticize all the way.
But how many times have you guys, like, just fallen off a platform, and you're like, oh, geez, I have to restart this whole thing again?
Okay, so here's where I'm going to get really negative. Ask you, I should actually call him up, I don't know if he's still here. Ask him how many times I wanted to throw the controller at the TV and was screaming at the top of my lungs. Okay. I'm sorry, but this game needs a remastered version. Like, if there's any game out of the series that they can actually remaster for a specific reason, it is this game because of the camera. Because at the time, the camera was revolutionary because it allowed the players to control the camera placement. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't perfect. And when I say it wasn't perfect, it still kind of sucks because I must have died like 100 times. Thank God the Wii U version, you can create restore points. Mm-hmm. 100 times just because the bloody camera wouldn't turn when it's supposed to turn, and I couldn't see where I was walking and would walk off the cliff or into like the bottomless pit. Mm-hmm. It is so incredibly frustrating. And once again, this is why Super Mario 64 is not my favorite game in the series, because I find it so incredibly frustrating. I just don't get the same amount of enjoyment from it as I do playing the rest of the games. And it's not because I'm not a good Mario player, because I've gone back and finished all of these games as we've been recording these podcasts. I'm a capable Mario player. It's not because I don't like a challenge. It's because of the way I am dying in this game. It's because the bloody camera was never there. Like, they just didn't have the technology at the time. Yeah. And so they released these remastered games, and, you know, some of them, like the Wind Waker was amazing, and even the DuckTales remastered was amazing. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of game where they can fix one or two little things, just tweak it a bit, especially that camera, and it would totally change the whole experience. And I was actually on the open source podcast, or sister podcast, earlier this week, and I sort of mentioned the fact that I was playing Mario 64, and games editor Mike Werby was also talking about the camera. And I just think that, like, you know, like, a lot of people like to look back, and because of nostalgia, because this is maybe one of the very first games that they've ever played in the series, like, for a specific generation, they just refuse to acknowledge the fact that this is a flaw, and it is a flaw in the game, and it's something that can be fixed. And so the thing is, with Super Mario World for the Wii U, all of these problems are fixed. You basically have Super Mario 64, but bigger, better, and you can play four players at a time. Mm-hmm. So if I had to choose which game I want to go back and play, I would always want to play Super Mario World for the Wii U first and foremost, only because the camera drives me insane.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like I said,
but to be fair, it was revolutionary at the time, and there are still moments where I'm blown away by how capable the camera is on its own. Like when you'll be running up a slope, and it'll automatically tilt for you so that you can see around the corner. Going back and playing the first Kingdom Hearts game, the camera in that game is atrocious.
Yeah,
but I would pick
this game's camera over Kingdom Hearts number one. Mm-hmm. For that reason, and it's just remarkable how ahead of its time Super Mario 64 was.
Yeah.
So that if we ever did get a game where they did remaster it and we had a perfect camera, I think it would be like Super Mario Galaxy in many people's minds, which is just an impeccable game. It's almost faultless.
Actually, it would be better, because even with Super Mario Galaxy, you have to play with the Wii controller, which that game we're going to talk about in a few weeks is amazing. I don't mind the Wii controller so much, but if they were to fix the camera in Super Mario 64, I would have no problem choosing Mario 64 over Mario Galaxy in terms of replay value. Mm-hmm. But this is the interesting thing, right? Is that this is why we're going back and playing these games once again and discussing it each and every single week leading up to the release of Super Mario Maker, because it's one thing to have memories of the game you played 20 years ago. It's a totally different beast when you actually go back and play it again.
Yeah.
And so there's always a difference in my view of greatest versus favorite, right? Mm-hmm. So if we're going to talk about greatest, you have to consider what the game did for the medium, how it changed video games, how it influenced video games, for what it did at the time that was revolutionary, et cetera, et cetera. Has a favorite, you have to choose what you prefer to play, even if it's 20 years later. So if I have to sit down and play these games, you know, say we had to destroy every single game in the series and I was only left with one game till the end of time, which one would I choose? I don't think I would choose this game just because the camera frustrates me so much. So as much as I think this game is a game changer and amazing and incredible, that's my biggest beef with the game. They could have really remastered this game, released it for the Wii U. I think that's what they should have done. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and also, like, you know, as soon as you turn on the screen, you know, a few things we take for granted nowadays, when you hear "It's a me, Mario,"
yeah,
correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't that the very first time we hear the voice of Charles Martinet and the very first time we hear that phrase on the opening screen, which now has become iconic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So right away, as soon as the game opens and you hear that opening, "It's a me, Mario," and then you see him in a 3D world, like, you back in the days, that this was going to be amazing. It was going to be unlike anything ever before. And I mean, this.
And then you start playing with his.
Yeah, you start playing with his face.
Yeah. And then, so, like, you know, there's a reason why critics say it's, like, the best game of all time or one of the best games of all time. Like, I mean, technology is always improving. You know what I mean? And so, like, since Super Mario 64 came out, there's been tons of games with sophisticated 3D graphics, but I still think that, like, there's very few that can be put in the same league as Super Mario 64.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the flaw in the camera work, despite the fact that I think the boss battle is kind of boring, there's very few games, at least platformers, that I could put in the same league as Mario 64. My third biggest nitpick of the game is a soundtrack, which you guys might like, but here's the problem with the soundtrack. So first of all, created by famous composer Koji Kondo, right? Mm-hmm. So he's the one, of course, that created the original Super Mario theme. So basically, this soundtrack consists of mostly remixed versions of earlier songs. There is new material, but most of it is remixed. The problem is the new material I do not like. There is one song, I swear to God, it sounds exactly like the theme song for Seinfeld, the TV show. And then the actual music that plays during the Bowser boss battle, it's kind of funny. Like, I actually kind of like it. It's kind of comedic. But it sounds like a song that came from some cheesy 80s, like, cult, I don't know, like, horror film or something. It's so weird. And it just feels out of place with the Super Mario universe. So I'm not a big fan of the soundtrack of this game. Whereas in some of the games that came before it, I think the soundtrack's killer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the soundtrack was even experimental for Nintendo.
Yeah. And I guess I just want to quickly talk about some of the levels. Okay, first of all, TikTok Clock, I think, is one of the greatest levels created for any Mario game, period. You play as Mario and you're running through the inner workings of a giant clock. And so Mario must deal with the clock's moving gears and pendulums and different obstacles as it speeds up, slows down, stops moving, et cetera, depending on the position of the clock's minute hand, which I think is mind-blowing. But it's just like, it takes so much imagination to come up with these ideas. And even like Cool Cool Mountain bucks the usual trend of having players scale up the mountain, and instead you actually start at the top of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And so we take this for granted, but I was thinking about this and I'm like, holy shit, in this level, we start at the top of the mountain. It's not about going up the mountain like in every single other video game out there. Like, there are some levels here where you have to go up a mountain and or climb up a tower. Like, for example,
the first world
or Tall Tale Mountain. But this was an amazing level, because not just because of the ice and the penguins and the cannons and the slides and the broken bridges and the secret areas that allow Mario to teleport, which is mind-blowing, the fact that he can teleport. But yeah, like, it just, like, going back and playing it, I'm like, yeah, I never thought about this. We're going down the mountain. We're not going up the mountain. And, like, things like the headless snowman and the reference to Santa Claus and Rainbow Ride. Like, come on. Is that not a great level?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the level designs in the game were very good, and it's super original. And it allowed for a lot of new gameplay for Mario. So it was really well designed.
Yeah, it's a new perspective on all of Mario. Like, not only is the art style totally...
Well, it's always been familiar ever since after.
And I think they've really developed the idea of these worlds. And now we have, like, in Super Mario 3D World, it's very much a combination of the 2D games and the 3D games. Mm-hmm. And it works really, really well. And you have these really, really intricate, beautifully done levels. But I think this is where they started that all.
Yeah.
And it's no longer just hop from this platform to this platform, which they do very 3D games. It's rendering an entire little sphere for Mario to live with.